Hello there, you amazing people. Welcome to the Amazing Action Comics Podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts. You can see me on the left, Angel, with Phil Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
It is going good, my brother. This is episode 101 of the Indie Comic Review for this week. I see we're taking some advice from last week. We got some extra stuff behind us now, which is cool.
I love the banner, by the way. That is awesome.
That's an old banner. I was trying to look for my new banner, but I couldn't find anything. And then I just started like propping stuff. So for those of you guys that don't know, I do have an office with an art table. Everything behind me is just like figures and toys and all artwork. But me and my wife share the same office, and she works from home. So guess who gets to go down to their basement and do a freelance setup? This guy right here. Yeah. All right, guys. It is March 1st of the year of our Lord, 2020. Oh, actually, no. It's the 2nd. But we're reviewing books for March 1st. So for those of you guys that are brand new, this is, Phil and I get together, and we review independent comics. So we call it the Indie Comic Review. Just like that. Yeah. Woo. So we're going to get into it really shortly. But before we get there, we started, I think, 2 months ago with an indie movie or indie comic movie review. So anything, a type of movie that was made from an independent comic or graphic novel. So the first one we did was Judge Dredd. And then we went into, Spawn.
Spawn, last week, yeah.
Last week. Yeah. And then at the end of this month, which is March 30th, we do it the last Thursday of the month, at 1:30, we're going to be doing The Crow, which you read, yes,
Phil? Oh, yeah. One of my absolute favorites, probably one of my first indie books that I ever really, really just loved and just embraced and loved the movie.
You're holding up.
There I got. This is my guy. Look at that.
You're holding up Brandon Lee. Fantastic.
Yes. So he's cool. He's got a little crow attachment that hangs over his shoulder.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but you got to plug the thing in the crow's butt there, which is kind of weird. So So I love the comic, the original comic. Love the movie as well. Significant changes between both, but both really are just like the upper echelon. We're talking original flavor. We're not talking about the sequel comics or the sequel movies, and I think they're a TV show or something. We're not going to touch that. We're really just going to focus on the Crow movie as well as the original 6-issue Crow miniseries.
Nice. Yeah. So you know what I did today? I actually went on Amazon and I ordered it because I've never read it.
Nice.
So I should be getting it tomorrow. So I should be abreast or up to speed with the graphic novel. And then the movie, I watched it recently, so I'm just going to watch it again because it's such a great movie.
Fire it up. I mean, there's just so many things that work in that movie. We don't want to get it. We're 3 weeks away from talking about it. I don't want to get ahead.
Yes. I'm going to watch it at least once a week, and it's going to be fresh in my head. All right. So like I stated before, that's the news that we have for this week. So look out for March 30th as we go into that indie comic movie review. Yes, make sure you bring it that day as well.
All right, of course. So
we're gonna hop right into it then. So we're gonna start with our indie comic reviews, and I believe we have 5 books for you this week because Phil just could not stop reading.
I couldn't get enough,
so I'm gonna throw you on a spot and check it. We're gonna start with Rock and Roll Hell
from Sumerian Comics. It is a one-shot. And it's got a lot of pages, no ads except for a couple Sumerian ads in the back. But what's really interesting, and I don't know, you would probably know more about this. I just kind of want to talk about this book for a second, like the physicality of this book, because most books, when you open the front cover, there's an ad or something, a credits page.
Right.
Completely
nothing.
White.
Huh.
And completely white. So I don't know if this is an error. And I know you deal a lot with like the blank comic books, right? For those who don't know, there are blank cover variants that artists like Angel can draw on, or you can bring to a convention and have an artist sketch on it. There's no ads on the inside of that sketch cover, right? That's a completely white.
No. So sometimes you'll have the internal credits on some of the covers.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so it could be all blank, but sometimes there are credits inside. So it's weird that, are there credits in the book at all?
That's the other thing. There's no credits in this entire thing. It kicks off with the story, and you get to the end of the story. You get the ads in the back and no credits. The only thing you get is this page right here, right after the final page. I don't want to show too much.
Right.
And it just, you know, so you have your little indicia on the bottom. Rock and Roll Hell, 2023. Copyrighted Sumerian Comics, LLC, Ben Roberts and Sam Romesberg.
But no credits.
That's it. That's the whole legal stuff. Yeah. So I'm going to say written by Ben Roberts and illustrated by Sam Romesberg. So there you go. If I got an error copy or something, I don't know. There weren't too much of these left. So
that's funny.
So, yeah, that being said, Rocky, I love this sort of genre of like heavy metal music in comics. We've seen a couple, like a month ago, there was that Black Tape, which kind of has a heavy metal theme. You know, it follows a heavy metal lead singer who dies on stage. And other books that I've loved were like Gods of Brutality, mm-hmm. Which focuses on a heavy metal singer who dies, goes to hell. And then he has to escape hell with the help of Hercules and Thor. Love that book. Very Eric Larson, Savage Dragon vibe on that one. So I was really excited for this and I really enjoyed this. But boy, is this thing's wild. So essentially Rock and Roll Hell is a heavy metal festival in, I want to say like Finland or Sweden or some Scandinavian, European area. And it is put together by a band named Feral Carnage. And these guys, you know, you have Grant, the bass player, who's really, really stoned right now, really. Faustus, drummer, your average satanic weirdo nerd. Heinrich, singer, rhythm guitar, you don't want to fuck with this guy. And Frode, lead guitar, thinks he's really good looking. But these guys are like all from Florida, and they're like nothing here in the States, but they have a 100,000 people at this concert to see them, you know. And this just so happens to be the day that Jesus decides to prove himself to his father and basically bring about Judgment Day on specifically just this festival. So a little background context for those who don't know, Jesus is from the Bible. Spoiler alert, for a 2,000-year-old story, he is the Son of God. Another spoiler alert, because he's the Son of God, he does get killed. Another spoiler alert.
Dude, I haven't even read the book. Why are you spoiling it?
There's a few movies. Another spoiler alert, he does come back after 3 days and then goes up to heaven to basically, you know, be the Son of God. Another spoiler alert, 2,000 years later, you know, nothing has gotten better, but that was his words of comfort when he left. But anyway, so
he gave us Christmas.
He did give us Christmas. So here's the thing. This is what's so weird about it. What's really funny about this is they established that experience on Earth really messed Jesus up. That that being killed by the people he was supposed to help and then being resurrected just left him an empty shell of a man. So for the last 2,000 years, he's been up in heaven getting drunk. And his dad has kind of had enough, you know? So now he's like, so you have a drunken Jesus who's like, gather some angels who are basically supposed to prevent him from doing this. And he says, no, you're coming with me. We're going to go. We're going to judge humanity. He lands on this Rock and Roll Hell festival and says, I've seen enough. And just carnage ensues. And really, really, really cool, visceral action as far as when everything gets laid to waste in this. So I don't really want to give too much of this one shot away because a lot does happen. And almost like every page, there's something cool that happens. So I really liked it. It was very satirical. It reminded me a lot of that Adult Swim show, Metalocalypse, that band Death Clock. Mm. But yet drawn almost in an Archie style, which I thought was really neat and lent itself to it. And basically the ups and downs that the band goes through in this incident shatters them and then brings them together. And it's just some really neat, violent heavy metal action. Because, of course, to counteract Jesus and the angels, you know, bring about Judgment Day, they decide that they have a song. There's like, you know, a book with a song, you know, like the notes and everything, the sheet music to bring about the devil and his army. Except they don't know how to read sheet music. Also, they don't know if it's going to work because this all comes from a comic book that they decide. So then you do have this massive holy fight between angels and demons and this heavy metal band caught in the middle. So I really like it. It's a one shot, but I kind of want to see more. And
was it a complete story for a one shot?
It was absolutely a complete story. With a little bit of a humorous tag at the end that does open it up for a little bit more if they choose to. But as a one shot, I think it's great. It was very entertaining. It was very quirky and subversive, and I really like that. And I love those themes that they play on, this struggling heavy metal band that no one knows them in the States, but they're huge abroad. But then, you know, because of circumstances, their whole audience gets just completely wiped out. 100,000 people are just destroyed at this festival. Again, which is very much a Death Clock thing. So if you really like that kind of thing, if you enjoy Gods of Brutality, like I said, if you like Metalocalypse, like this is a really good book. It's a winner. Rock and Roll Hell, Sumerian Press, most likely written by Ben Roberts and illustrated by Sam Roenberg. So yeah, that's it. That's the first one.
Sounds good. All right, Rock and Roll Hell. Check it out from Sumerian Comics. All right, so let's move on to something that we both read, which was pretty cool. Phantom Road from Image Comics. So this is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel Walter, and the colorist is Jordi Belair, with lettering and design by Steve Wands. All right, so let's start from the very beginning. So we've got Jeff Lemire. We've read stuff from him before. I think the latest thing that I actually hopped onto and hopped off kind of early was Little Monsters.
Yes.
Now, not because it was bad. So Jeff Lemire goes through his ups and downs. So he'll have a story that he'll just give to you right there and then, or he'll give you a slow burner that'll burn for like 11 issues before it climaxes and gets anywhere. So Little Monsters is a great concept because it was just these little kids that are vampires, but it felt like who are waiting for like their master to come back because he'd been gone for, I think, over 200 years from what I remember. And then they find some human kids and some stuff starts to ensue. But it felt like the first five issues kind of like repeated themselves. So that's where, and with as much as there is out there that we just keep reading week to week, for me to go back and be like, didn't I just read this? But that doesn't take anything away from Jeff Lemire because I think he's a great writer. Mm-hmm. I read, you know, Gideon Falls was fantastic. I think he had Royal City. So yeah, there's stuff that I like that he does really, really well. And he does, what I like that he does with stories is character development.
Mm-hmm.
Like every character in the story has a background to them. So it makes it a little bit more meatier, makes it a little bit more real so that you can invest a little bit more of yourself into the story. This one is no different. So you basically have this trucker dude who's on the road for long periods of time, days even, and is having trouble at home as well. So there's a little bit of background on him in regards to his wife, his son, them having some difficulty, him being on the road and kind of like flashing back and forth with some of the stuff that's happened in his past while he's on the road. And while he's on the road, he runs into this a car that's got into a car crash. It flips upside down. I believe there's two people. One person I believe is dead, and the girl, I believe her name is Birdie. She's still alive, but is not knowing what's going on. She's kind of dazed. And this artifact is sitting in the middle of the road. They have no idea what it is. So this is just shit that comes out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, he touches the artifact, and boom, they're someplace else. With the truck, just him and her, someplace else. They don't know where they are. They see somebody off in the distance. He goes to go see if he can help them. They turn around, and it's this disfigured freaking zombie-like whatever. What was really cool, though, is that when they touch the artifact, I don't know if you noticed, but the color change and the whole tone of the comic. So mm-hmm. it was like they were sort of like in a surreal, like dream world. Mm-hmm. It's not real for some reason. They got sucked into it. So I thought that was pretty cool. And what I love that Jeff Lemire does, that he does really, really well, is he leaves each issue with a freaking great cliffhanger that makes you want to come back for more. So the storytelling in this was fantastic because he's just a really great storyteller. There's just enough dialogue in this book to let alone the art, because the art is fantastic in this. The sequences between the panels are fantastic. Yeah, I really dug it. And that, that ending with, you know, him sitting in the back of the truck and all those bodies just laid out. And he's like, all right, what's next? It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I thought it was great. I thought it was really well paced. You know, again, we've talked about this trope before where your first page, you get like a tension moment and then you work backwards. That, you know, so it's a moment that you will encounter later on in the story. And then, you know, you turn the page, chapter one begins, and you are before that moment. And you actually get to see the buildup to that specific moment in this issue, which is really nice. And again, it's a really cool setup. I love the concept of the, you know, this phantom zone, we'll say, that's just slightly out of sync vibrationally, I guess, with our reality, and that this object in the road is this key, this trigger, this gateway to get there. And I like that there's questions raised. You know, why were they transported along with his truck? Why did the car and the body also not get ported over with it as well? She also mentions that even though she didn't touch the object, as the car she was in approaches, she was seeing visions. She was seeing things. So you don't necessarily have to touch this thing in order for it to affect you. You just need to even be in close proximity.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool. And it's a great sort of question as to the nature of this thing that is built up in this issue that will clearly be explored later on. I don't know if it's an ongoing or a mini, but I'm definitely along for the ride. I think it's really cool. I love those phantom beings that they encounter. In fact, I got the variant cover because it does feature those phantom beings on it, as well as the truck driving on the crowbar, which is a really neat visual image, and really does, you know, each of those elements does come to play into the story. So I think this is definitely a good one from Image, a good one from Jeff Lemire. You're right. You know, certain things that are longer pieces like Little Monsters, very Bendis style decompressed storytelling. But something like this, or the Primordial he did recently with Andrea Sorrentino, you know, real tight narrative, real each issue complete and in its own, but carries you nicely into the next chapter. And I think that this is going to do the same thing. So Phantom Road, I dug it.
Yeah, I did too as well. If you guys like sort of like this mystery kind of grindhouse type of book, check out Phantom Road from Image Comics. All right, so let's move on. So we'll give you another shot at, this is an AWA book, right? Red Zone.
Yes.
Let's hop into that one.
Yes, I love the stuff from AWA. I think they got some great, you know, diversity in storytelling. And they always get some really top-notch talent. Some of their stuff is a shared universe, but it's not intrusive on what you're reading. And some of it, I think, is definitely its own thing. So this is called Red Zone, and it is written by Cullen Bunn. It is illustrated by Mike Diodato, and finding the rest of the credits. And colored by, because it's in the back this time, colored by Lee Loffridge and lettered by Steve Wands. And of course, I was also, you know, that swerve with Sumerian with the lack of credits just screwed me all up. So nice. Red Zone. It is a real legit spy thriller that takes place mostly in Russia. Your lead character is a history teacher at a university, and he is, you know, definitely post middle age. I would probably place him mid to late 50s, and he is, on all appearances, very reserved, very, you know, buttoned down, and is recruited by a special agent to extract an old flame of his from Russia. This woman has a lot of information that she is now willing to bring to the United States. So, of course, she is a commodity and is very much wanted. So they have this whole extraction team set up, and he meets her. You know, he goes. So the professor goes to Russia with this team, meets her at the appointed destination, and then it all goes sideways from there. And you are introduced to her daughter, who she also wants to have brought out of Russia with her. And again, nothing really goes as planned in this first issue. And you are basically left with this button down, you know, definitely not super spy material professor, and this young woman now trying to make their way out of Russia. And then you kind of get this reveal that this professor might not be so meek and buttoned down as you think he is, and that he actually has this other side to him that is very much a James Bond sort of super spy. So you kind of have Indiana Jones, James Bond sort of combination in there, which I thought was really cool. So I really dug this. It's a 4-issue miniseries. The first issue really moves, and it looks like there's the promise of just even more intense and weirder things to come, even though this issue is pretty grounded. But Colin Bunn is a solid writer. Mike Diodato is an amazing artist, and he just, he just has such a cinematic quality to his layouts, and his light and shadow work. And big thing is, he loves to cast with actual actors. And he chose for the lead actor in this a French actor who has, he's a character actor. He's had some bit parts in some domestic movies, Vincent Cassel. If you saw the movie Black Swan, I believe he was in that. So really good choice, though, I think.
Is he still doing multi-panel layouts and then just crossing through them?
Absolutely. And it's really interesting because a lot of them this way, they almost look like it's going to read across.
Right.
But they're not double page spread. So you do read just the page at a time. But when you open them up and lay them out like that, it just really just pops, though. It's really just beautiful. And really, again, like I said, cinematic. So you're really just getting the whole picture of a scene when you're looking at it. So it mimics a double page spread, but it doesn't read that way, which I thought was a really cool effect and technique. But yeah, Red Zone by AWA. Give this one a shot, especially if you just like the spy genre and the action adventure thing. Very different from the other spy movie or spy book that I've been reading and enjoying, Spy Superb. This is a much more competent, capable, and likable as of now protagonist. But I think as we see more of his dark side creep in, I think some of those lines are going to get blurred. But yeah, Red Zone, AWA.
Okay, check it out, guys. Yeah. All right, so moving on to the next book. So that is going to be me. This is from Mad Cave, actually Studios, not comics, called Hunt, Kill, Repeat. Now, I will have to tell you this. I enjoyed this book much more than I actually thought I was going to enjoy. When we looked at the interior art, you and I saw it on the shelf. We were like, you know what? This looks pretty interesting. And then I read sort of like the synopsis for it. And here it goes. This is what it reads as. It's Kill Bill, which I love, meets Clash of the Titans, which I love. Nice. So you put two things that I love together, and you've got me. I'm a hook. So this is written by Mark London. The artist, I'm going to butcher this name because I think it's probably the most Italian name. Francesco Arcidiacono. I think.
Good enough. You got the R's and the roll, and that's good. make it sound Italian, and you're good. Boobity bop.
Good. Boobity bopity boop. The inker is Mark Deering, and the colorist is Lee Lowridge, with letters by Russ Wooten. This book was, just from beginning to end, just had me enticed. So basically, the gist of it is you had the old god Zeus and his children pissed off because the current world is sort of like forgotten them and sort of like worshiping technology now. So Zeus is like, F these guys, they don't want to listen, let's just kill them all. So they actually come down to Earth, they wreak havoc, and they enslave humanity. They make Olympus in New York. So in Manhattan, Mount Olympus is where it sits currently. And everybody is subservient to them now. While the children just roam around, just if nobody's going to pay attention and then blaspheme, then they're gone, they're dead. And they have these avatars that actually keep people in check. So basically you have one of his daughters who decided to, or got pulled in by a human, Artemis, and fell in love with a human. And she's pregnant. So on the cover, that's Artemis with the big belly. And so Zeus gets caught wind of this, and he's like, nope, not going to have it. He calls for her to come to Mount Olympus. Her brothers and sisters hate her because of what she's done. And Zeus is funny because he comes out and he tries to talk to her all calmly. You know, you haven't written, you haven't stopped by, do you hate your family? And she's like, basically, no, I don't hate my family. I hate what's going on and what you're doing to these people. And so basically the sisters pull her to the side and they open up her because she's trying to conceal that she's pregnant from Zeus. And his eyes just go, he goes ballistic. And so basically he has all of the children beat her right in front of him. The sisters, Apollo, Hermes, is beating the crap out of her. And Hermes is the only one like, no, I don't want anything to do with this. It doesn't have anything to do with me. And Zeus comes in and says, do what I told you or you're going to be next. And he says, I'm sorry. And you just see him running really fast and just punches her, like clocks her right in the mouth, which is crazy. Let me see if I have. Yeah. He just clocks her like right in the mouth, boom, and says, I'm sorry, which is great. So basically he's punishing her. At the same time, he's apologizing. He's like, I'm sorry I have to do this to you, but you can't break up the family. You know, everybody's a part of the branch, but we're all part of the same root kind of thing. So the branches can grow in different directions, but they all call back to the same root, and you're part of us. And he's upset that she chose the human race over her family. Long story short, they knock the shit out of her. He takes his lightning bolt staff and knocks her in the belly. Mm. And we don't know what happens from there. So we don't. So first of all, the husband is found and is brought before Zeus. And Zeus blows out his brains in front of her. So he's dead, done. Then supposedly kills the baby as well, the unborn child in her belly. And then she wakes up. It's 10 years later. So they've been inducing her in a coma. And that's her punishment, that she's going to be in a coma for the rest of her life. So basically, she wakes up in this hospital where they create avatars. And the avatars are like the police of the world to make sure that everybody's abiding by the rules of the gods. And the avatars are created, and they're created with people that are willing to become and turn into avatars. But they're mindless. They're shells of who they used to be. So they're not even human anymore. And they dress in like all these like gold garb or whatever it is. And so we get to the very end of the issue where she wakes up and she's being induced with this serum by one of the avatars that keeps her in a coma. And the avatar's talking to her, saying, you're a bitch, you betrayed your family. And as he's walking away, boom, she wakes up. And then the avatar turns around, is going to try to subdue her. She kills him, whatever it is, escape the hospital, and somebody's waiting for her outside. And the guy that's waiting for her is the one that actually mixed in a chemical to wake her up from the coma. Dude, it's fucking, it's like interlaced even more. And we come to find out that it's Hephaestus that has woken her up for the next plan of what's to come, because he wants to take revenge against Zeus, who Zeus thought everybody killed. So supposedly Hephaestus is supposed to be dead, but he's not. So he wants Artemis to join him to get back revenge on Zeus. Dude, fucking great. I don't know why. I've never read anything from Mad Cave Studios. I've been around for a while. They are a small publisher. They've done a couple of other things. I think one of their first comics was something about like lions or something like that. Like these anthropomorphic lions that you know fought or whatever. The art looked pretty cool, and I never got into it. But this, yeah, I'm gonna put myself on the poll because it really was worth it. The art is great. The color is great. The facial expressions. The panel layouts. It's an oversized, so it was $4.99, so I didn't mind paying, but you got a good like 40 pages out of the storytelling. And it was really, really told well. So, yeah. Hunt, Kill, Repeat from Mad Cave Studios. Check them out because it was really, really good.
Shout out to Lee Lawford for making it onto two books we reviewed this week too.
What else did he do?
He called Red Zone. Yeah.
Oh, did he really? Oh, yeah. Nice. Hey, well, getting work out
good
there.
Job, Lee.
Yeah, hold on. We need to give him a nice round of applause for that. Oh, that's fantastic. Join him for that.
I have to say, we have the best audience in live podcasting, live video podcasting. You guys are beautiful. Thank you.
They are. They're fantastic. All right. Do you have one more?
I do.
What is it called?
So first of all, disclaimer, it's not an issue one. It's actually an issue two. It is Project Shadowbreed, number two, volume two, number two from Amazing Action Comics. And our credits are created and written by Justin Bartz, illustrated by Randy Meyer, cover art and letters by Angel Santiago.
He sounds multi-talented.
He does sound multi-talented. And dare I say it, you know, might be good looking, but I don't know. I'm not a good judge on such things.
Thank God.
And edited by Holly Ann Bartz. So first and foremost, if you're not familiar with the Project Shadowbreed Volume 1 or the first issue of Volume 2, this is a really good issue to pick up because it really does kind of get you up to speed in a really good way. You have a nice little paragraph at the beginning that kind of tells you exactly, what your scenario is. In the new millennia, Syntech, a private government contract corporation began developing a serum to turn ordinary soldiers into werewolves. With the backing of the U.S. military, Syntech perfected the serum. In 2014, they created the first wolf pack of soldiers. What they didn't expect to create was Marek. And Marek is such a really cool character who is sort of this, he's kind of stuck between wolf and human form. He is your protagonist. He is the one you are following as he is relearning pieces of his memory that were lost because of this Project Shadowbreed. And when he was sprung by his aide-de-camp, Leroy. And you basically pick up with them where the last issue left off, traveling in their van. Poor Marek just wants a snack. And unfortunately, because he is being hunted, and just like the last issue where they faced off against some mercenaries, now there's a special op team called the Seekers that have tracked them down because they were dispatched by the Syntech Corporation, which you actually get a nice fuller exposition in the first couple pages where you actually have the Syntech Corporation meeting and basically how do we solve a problem like Marek. And that kind of sets you up for these guys. I love the dynamic of the hero and like the older guy driving around in the van, and constantly getting interrupted, by people after them. I think it's a really cool dynamic. That sort of road story is such a great trope and really lends itself to good character development. And the action here is great. It's intense. Poor Marek, again, he can't get a snack and he can't even take a leak without something really bad happening to him. So that's sort of, kind of what happens in here. One thing I really do like about this world that Julian has created is that it's very hyper or heightened reality, and everybody really loves to talk and explain what they're doing to the other. It's almost as if they know they're in a comic book, and I really dig that aspect because the banter between Marek, Leroy, and these three Seekers that are trying to at first capture, and then it just, then they just ditch their plans because of what happens. Is great because these guys are definitely, trying to stop each other, but they're really explaining to each other what's going on, where their motivations are coming from. And I just think it just adds something to this. It is very comic booky, and I like that because a lot of comic books try to just almost not make you feel like you're in a comic book, that they're written like a movie. And I don't know, I just, there was something about the dialogue that added to the character development and even made these three Seekers more well-rounded characters, and rather than just stock villains to come in and fight the guy and then go away and not be seen again, you know? So there's a really cool element that does make it a little more personal. And then speaking of, you know, making it more personal, there's a big revelation that kind of comes in that starts to fracture the relationship between Marek and Leroy, which leaves you in a really good place for issue 3. I thought that the artwork was great. It really has a nice indie comic feel. I think the black and white lends itself to that. And I just love the pacing of the action. And everything is clear and everything is fun. It's heavy scenario, but it's sort of a light approach to it that really makes it enjoyable and not something, you know, that's just too dark or too, so it's not as sort of hijinksy and comedic, I would say, as the Red Hyena, which is also in the same world, and there's references to Red Hyena in this. But it does sort of have that great sort of like buddy cop vibe. And again, you have, you know, really solid protagonist in Marek. He's got a visual great look and a really neat personality for somebody who doesn't have a lot of his memories. Still a very full and rounded character. And you really are kind of rooting for this guy. So I like that. So really dug this.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's funny because you're hitting, and listen, guys, you know, I'm co-founder of Amazing Action Comics with
you are
with Justin. Yes.
Whoa! This is a setup here.
There's a conflict of interest.
Grendel just got freaked out by it.
So Justin Bartz is the other co-founder, and you know he's up in Michigan, and you know we do this podcast because we love the whole indie, you know, just the genre itself of, you know, how many different stories there are to tell out there, and you know, to Phil's credit, he doesn't know any of the plot. And so it's really good when I hear Phil talking about the comics that we provide at Amazing Action Comics, because I need to know if we're going in the right direction. Because obviously we give our stuff to reviewers and they'll review the book. And I think reviewers after a while have sort of like a cache of things that they say. So they have like their little toolbox of, oh, they hit this mark, they hit this mark, they hit this mark. So you get kind of like similar answers from a whole bunch of reviewers. But when Phil's reading it and reviewing it, it's for me, I'm trying to make sure that certain things are being nailed with the storytelling, especially when I bring it back to Justin. And for you to come back and hit on that trope of the dialogue and the banter between, because you don't get a lot of that. And it really is comic bookish. It's almost a trope on the villains they used to monologue before, or like give you the plan of what was going to happen to you.
Like any, like every Spider-Man stories from the 70s through the 90s. Like, yeah.
Yes. And you still read them and it's like, oh my God, why is he monologuing? Just blow his head off already and just get it over with. And so, but in that monologuing or in that banter back and forth, you get so much more the details of the story. And it's funny because that stuff is happening in the middle of a fight.
Yeah.
Which I think is hysterical, because when people are fighting, they're just going, these guys are having a full-on conversation as they're punching each other in the face, which is fantastic. So I'm glad you caught that.
That's such an old-style comic book trope, you know? Yes. That's kind of why I like what you guys do. It's comics that made by guys who love comics, but especially like comics of a certain era, where a lot of this stuff was much more accepted than it is in today's comics.
Yes. And then on top of that, it's an oversimplified story, which I love as well. There's nothing for you to really think about as far as what's going on. Whatever's going on in front of you is going on in front of you. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot to think on. You appreciate the story that's being said. You turn the page and then leave it on a cliffhanger and then you go. But then on top of that, you do have these intricate, you know, stories that are going to start to intertwine, like this relationship with Marek and Leroy, who we're looking at 7 issues in, is now going to be tested. And these guys have been together for a while right now, and to, you know, try to get to understand what Leroy's real motivations are for having saved Marek, you know, for being a Vietnam veteran, what he goes through, you know, behind the scenes, and Marek going through this whole thing with, you know, being, you know, almost assassinated and then being stuck in that werewolf form and almost being like a Wolverine type where he doesn't have all of his memories, and that kind of drives him crazy. But but then he's getting outside information from people he doesn't know he can trust about the person he's supposed to be trusting, and it's conflicting with what's going on. So yeah, it's moving in such a really well direction as far as like the story itself. So I'm really excited to see, you know, where Justin is headed with this. Because I spoke with him the other day, and I was like, bro, you know the ending, right? And I said, don't tell it to me, but you know the ending, right? And he goes, yeah, I know the ending.
Merrick gets a snack. Merrick finally gets that snack. Dude, and the finish is Leak in peace.
I can't say anything, but it's so hysterical that in almost every issue, all he wants to do is eat. And he can never eat because something always happens.
Which is kind of cool because that's something that's never really addressed in that kind of a genre. Like, everybody just goes from fight to fight, and no one's ever like, I just want something to eat. Yeah. I'm starving, you know? Why can't I get a snack? You know, and I that's a great hook. And again, it just make it real, and it really helps you identify with the character. Because we could all identify with that, like being in the middle of a job or a task. You're like, I just need a... She needed like a candy bar or something, you know?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. It's hysterical. So yeah, product Shadow Brief, Amazing Action Comics. Right now this is in digital form, and hard copies will probably be available within the next month or so. But you can go to amazingactioncomics.com. Yeah, and check it out, and you know, give your 2 cents. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the comic. And we got some other great stuff coming down the pipe, which is fantastic. So
that's action figures yet?
Oh my god, that would be awesome. But no. Yeah, but the Project Shadow Brief movie should be coming out soon.
Yeah.
I think it'll come out before McFarlane's next Spawn movie.
Ooh, the gauntlet is thrown. That's it, Todd. We praised you last week, and now we're back to just giving you
we have to, right? all right, kiddies. That's what we have for you this week on the Indie Comic Review. So really great stories out there. So just make sure you head out to your local comic shop, pick some up, because it's awesome. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you click subscribe, because we'd love to have you back. Every week we're here every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. unless Phil changes his mind, and then we have to change the time on top of that. If you're a creator and you want to come onto the podcast because you want to promote yourself and or a project that you have going on, visit amazingactioncomics.com/podcast. We'd love to have you on and speak about your project and yourself, maybe a little bit. Go to amazingactioncomics.com to see what we got going on. We've got a whole bunch of stuff coming down the pipe within the next, I think we laid out the next 6 months to a year, which is exciting. And then we have other creators that I've been talking to as well. Smash Adam is coming out at the end of this year, which is sort of like the creator of Courage, Dino Caruso, who did sort of like that Silver Age hero stuff, has another hero book that's coming out. It's a little bit more relevant, but oh my gosh, it looks fantastic. So make sure you go to amazingactioncomics.com to check that out as well. Make sure to support your local comic book shops, because without them, we couldn't get these wonderful stories. So yeah, visit your local comic shop, take something off the shelf and have some fun with it. Where do you get your comics from, Phil?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey, where you can get these books and so much more. Also, if you ever come on down to the shop, not only will you, you know, if you're watching the show live, yeah, this is a cool experience. But, you know, once you add smell to it, when you're face to face with Angel and I, it is a completely other experience. And you'll find us at The Joker's Child pretty much every day. Every week we get new stuff in. You've got to check it out, not just once, not just twice, but make it part of your regular rotation, even if you're in Saskatchewan. Just get on that plane, fly down to New Jersey, come to The Joker's Child, and give us a high five.
Yes, do so, please. That'd be fucking fantastic. And then just a quick reminder again, at the end of this month, we do have that Indie Comic movie review with The Crow. Really, 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 really looking forward to that, so it should be great. All right, kiddies, until next time. Oh, my God, there he goes. Remember to be amazing, to stay amazing, and read something amazing.